you said 2 minutes after.
I'm going fish, 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 fishing. I'm going fishing, hook, sinker, and line. I said fish, 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 fishing. Boy, I'm going fishing just to ease my mind.
Well, good morning, boys and girls. Afternoon, evening, depends, I guess, which part of the world you're, you know, checking in from. All 14 of you who listen to us on the internet, we appreciate that very much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, all 14.
Yes, all 14. We like you. Let's see. I was actually just kind of wondering what was going on with the Peace River. We actually started seeing some rain clouds around and stuff, and it literally hasn't changed anything.
Yeah, we had a little bit of rain here today. When you looked on the radar, it was only raining in Northport.
Last night I looked, and there was pretty good rain, but it seems to kind of go along I-75. You know, it builds up on the east side of 75 and kind of stays on the east side of 75, unless you get a buildup in Northport. You can tell where the woods are, because between Port Charlotte and Northport, there's not a lot of building there yet, a lot of woods yet, so you get a lot more rain comes up through there. But it's funny, the River of Blacktop separates the two climates now, the inside of Florida climate and the coastal climate of Florida. People don't really get how that works, but it does. Watch the rain. It'll rain 6-10 times east of I-75 for every time it rains on the west side of 75.
Right, and I'm hearing the rain on the roof right now.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and it's in order to hear it in here, it's got to be coming down pretty hard.
Well, hopefully I rolled up my windows. If I didn't, I can swim. All right.
Nice.
Fish and Frank here, swimming extraordinaire. Robert in the chair across from me, and RJ at command and control. Tarpon continues to be the big story around the area right now.
Yeah.
And considering they average about 150 pounds, well, that's a pretty big story.
Yeah, no, it's a very fun and big story. You know, the only weird part is they really haven't moved it into the harbor yet. You know, it's strange because they should be in here in fairly good numbers in the holes, and even with all the schools of thread fins, both smaller size thread fins and big hand size thread fins, they're just not inside the harbor much. They're mostly still out there in that pass and starting to break apart a little bit out on the beaches.
What about the old guy tarpon? Now, I like the tarpon fish, but I am not doing the same tarpon as the tourists come here to do. Tourists come to Florida to actually hook a fish that will beat the living tar out of them. They want to be abused, beaten, worn down, and actually have a fish do humiliating acts of violence against them.
Yeah, pretty much.
So, now,
but you're talking about more of the fun-sized tarpon.
Yeah, well, no, the old guy-sized tarpon. Because when I was in my 20s and 30s, I went after the 150s, the 200s. I absolutely loved it. But
right.
It seemed like each passing decade dropped 10 inches off of the fish. Every year, I wanted a fish an inch smaller. By 10 years go by, I wanted 10 inches smaller, you know. 30 years have gone by, I'm 30 inches smaller than what I wanted back when I was in my 20s, you know, or 30s. And these can be amazingly fun tarpon to catch. And I think it's kind of a forgotten or overlooked resource when it comes to the tarpon fishing. Because these things do jumps out of the water and backflips, and they're amazing fun to catch. But you can catch them on a rod with 10-pound mono, 15-pound braid. It doesn't have to be anything extraordinary for the rod. And these fish are up to 4 foot long.
Yeah. Yeah, basically you're talking about the little 10 to 50-pounders.
No, I'm talking about from very tiny up to 40, 50 pounds.
Right.
And it's really funny, but you can land that 40, 50-pound tarpon on the same rod you fish for trout, snook, or redfish with.
Absolutely.
And
a lot of times it's the same lures.
Actually, snook lures are usually too big.
Yeah, true.
I think one of the biggest mistakes people make, because you go out in a tarp, out in the harbor, you're looking through the deep holes, you cruise the outside of the sandbars on the east or west side, you go up on the hill, which is just inside of Boca Grande Pass. Traditionally, what we now more modern call the hill is inside of the intercoastal, kind of in line with Boca Grande Pass, and covers that area on the northwest corner of Pine Island, off of the northwest corner of Pine Island. But the hill up there, you're looking for 80 to 200 pound fish. That's what's going to be out there.
Correct.
And there's sharks, there's big tarpon. You go out Boca Grande Pass and you see literally thousands of tarpon blowing up out of the water, and it's spectacular. And even if you don't have a boat, just pick a weekday to go out there to the state park by the lighthouse, take a lawn chair, umbrella to keep out of the sun, some comfortable drinks, and hang out on this beach and bring binoculars, because just to watch it is adrenaline pumping.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you don't get excited watching that, then I don't know what's going to really excite you.
Yeah, you shouldn't be fishing. If that doesn't excite you, you should not be a fisherman.
Right. Yeah, it's a spectacular sight. Plus, it's out there, it's like, it's kind of the NASCAR of fishing, no less. Not to mention you got all these fish going everywhere.
You're betting on which boat is going to survive this. Is that guy going to sink that guy? Is he going to smash him in midships? Are they going to bang him together? Is there going to be a fist fight? You know, you could literally get the,
Oh, you got a whole story to make up by your own self watching all the stuff for sure.
You know, okay, I got $5 that says this guy is the biggest butthead in the past.
Yeah.
You know, there's no doubt about it.
Exactly.
But with all these amazing things, and then not even to mention along the beaches, these tarpon cruise along the beaches, and you can be out there swimming and have a school of tarpon literally just go right through the swimmers.
Yeah. Yeah, not for me, but yeah.
It's not uncommon because now when you're swimming in the Gulf of Mexico, we don't have the continental shelf out there. We don't technically have what's called surf fishing. That requires breakers out of ways. And then, you know, you're casting a long distance to get out to the breaker and all that. We have, it's more like fishing a lake shore when you're in the Gulf of Mexico. But you have the beach, you've got a little bit of a trough, and then usually a sandbar builds up out there.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people swim out, and they're going across 10, 15 feet of water. All of a sudden, they're standing up on a bar.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of crazy.
And the tarpon will cruise along the top of that bar, sometimes just inside or outside of that bar. And it's not uncommon for the tarpon to swim right through the swimmers. And it's just as equally not uncommon for a 12-foot hammerhead or
I was just about to say that. What usually follows that school? And it's going to be a big MF shark. And, if you're in a school of tarpon and you're all like, oh, look at all the tarpon swimming around me, it's time to get to shore.
Yeah.
Because not too far behind is going to be somebody that will eat you.
The only thing about it is the chance of getting bit by a shark are like 1 in 11 million or 14 million. Same odds as getting hit by lightning. Both are pretty terrifying. Now, I've been hit by lightning, knocked unconscious by lightning. Yes, it explains a lot. I get that.
Yeah, I wasn't going anywhere with that.
Yeah, I already knew this was coming out. But actually, it was laying underneath the truck. We had left during Hurricane Francis. We had a Winnebago and an older one, and which we ended up living in for like 3.5 years till I get a house built. But we took a ride. Just, you know, there was nothing to do. The store wasn't open. The house is destroyed. We're in the Winnebago anyway. So we took a ride, and I blew a brake line. And so I'm stopped at this auto parts store, which was on a big hill up in the Carolinas, and get on a level spot, block off the wheels, crawl underneath. I'm replacing the brake line. I've just about got it on. I have a real problem getting the threads to fit on the top. Getting that brake line on, and all of a sudden a rainstorm starts, and I can see the water coming down the hill. You know how the rain hasn't got to you yet, but it's raining so hard above you on the hill that the water starts flowing down. Then the lightning bolt hit right as the water hit me. He was probably within 100 yards of me because that was jumping around. So I've been actually hit more than once by lightning. I'm lucky, aren't I? But anyway, back onto the beach. We're on the beach, and the sharks, if you're a woman, you don't have to outswim the shark. Just kind of get around a guy. They will always bite at men first.
Seems to be, yeah.
Humans are really nasty food. We're oily and stringy, and we just don't taste good to anything. Luckily for us, it helps us survive as a species. But men are threatening. The testosterone and all the rest of the stuff from the guys. If you're a woman, all you got to do is just kind of let a guy get between you and the shark. You're pretty much golden because he's not coming after you anyway. So women have almost no fear of sharks, or shouldn't have it, because pretty much it would be a very, very random act for a woman to get bit.
Yeah.
Unless, you know, they're on a surfboard and they look like a seal.
True.
So anyway, but with all these different tarpon things here, one of the things that I enjoy the most is fishing for the sub-adults, the juveniles.
Yeah.
And using very, very tiny objects. If it's 3 inches long, what you're throwing, it's probably too big. If you fish with rattle traps, they'll hit a tiny trap or a quarter-ounce rattle trap, but a half-ounce rattle trap's too big for them. They don't want that. Now, Robert has taught me that tarpon grow up eating insect larvae. We're not even talking insects. We're talking insect larvae, that tiny. So by the time they're 2-3 feet long, they're barely up to eating objects that are 1-2 inches long.
Yeah, with any consistency.
Right. Every once in a while, one is going to get stupid and eat something bigger or just weird, or he's just a random rebel tarpon that just can't abide by normal tarpon behavior. We never see that in humans.
Yeah, right, never.
So, but the smaller the object is, if you think more crappie fishing, if you think more small trout, stuff like that, you're going to catch a lot more of these tarpon.
Well, absolutely. You know, and the coolest part about those tarpon with their little baits is it doesn't matter if you're fishing up on the river or on the flats, because a lot of people associate them with more of the open harbor or around the bridges. But you've shown me more often than not with the amount of juvenile tarpon that stay on the inside of the bar on the east side and the west side and can have some amazing days of 10, 15 fish days.
Yeah. Many times I've had people with me who have had their inshore slams with a snook, a tarpon, a redfish, trout, all because I found these fish, these tarpon, while I was trout fishing.
Yeah.
And learned to fish them while I was trout fishing. It wasn't, okay, I'm going to go here on the flats and fish for these tarpon. I'm using very small lures for trout, just with customers or friends trying to, you know, just find some fish to catch and have some fun with, and end up in these schools of tarpon. And it's just, boom, one and then another one. Sometimes it's a random one or two, but it's like any other fish. Sometimes you just find one or two by themselves. Sometimes there's a whole grouping or school of them. But on the east side of the harbor, they seem to collect more on the northern half from the middle part of it to the north than they do from the middle south. Now, the snook fishing, even redfish on the east side, is usually better on the south half. And the snook fishing's better in the south half. But for some reason or other, I find more tarpon on the northern part.
Yeah, it's a little strange. You know, the only thing that makes sense to me is because of maybe the water flow coming up that east side from Boca Grande pushes it up and causes that little eddy up there between, say, Alligator Creek and Whore Point / Mangrove Point. You know, maybe that's why those fish like that more northern end of the east side.
Well, I'm talking behind the bar before you get to Alligator Creek.
Right. No, I understand that, but I'm just trying to relate of what might keep them...
Not a clue.
Intrigued on that.
It shouldn't be eddying there.
No.
It's pretty far down for that, you know, right, from the halfway point up. So I don't know about the eddy. I think they eat the same stuff as snook and redfish and everything else.
Yeah.
They're pretty much going for the same food.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, guys catch them on whitebait shrimp. They're throwing the small DOA shrimp, the small 3-inch paddle tails. You know, it's amazing what you'll catch them.
Oh, yeah. Are really kind of the way to go. The smaller, the skitter walk, the DOA PT, and, you know, those smaller topwaters are really just some of the most phenomenal ways to catch them.
Even a tiny torpedo.
Yeah, anything that has a prop on it, sits on the surface and chug it along. The old Johnny Rattlers, my dad was a big one, and when we were finding these tarpon, because he threw these topwater plugs, and he was always into the tarpon. That's where I learned where they went and how they did it and all that kind of stuff. But, RJ, do you think it's a food source? The habitat, when the water comes in from Boca Raton Pass, very little of it goes to the south, because below Boca Raton Pass, we have Captiva Pass, Redfish, and Ponderosa. We have three more passes there, all trying to bring water into the harbor. So most of the water from Boca Raton Pass comes all the way in, hits the east side, and then the vast majority is deflected north. Some does go south, but because of the passes below that, the water's already trying to come in there, so it kind of forces it on a northerly thing. And it's pushing that water from the burnt store Pirate Harbor area up north towards Punta Gorda. Do you think that maybe the salt water from the Gulf would push them up there, or is it a food issue? The habitat's pretty similar.
Salinity probably has a lot to do with it, especially with juvenile fish, you know, that are growing up in the least, I don't want to say brackish, because we don't have brackish water here. We have salt water, or we have fresh water.
We have brackish water, except in the eyes of the law. The law says salt water, fresh water.
Yeah.
Only tourists go, well, this is brackish.
I was following the lead. Anyway, the salinity drops as you get closer and closer to the river mouths, because you got fresh water mixing in with that. And I think that tarpon are sensitive to salinity. And you've got the younger ones growing up where there's less salinity, and they're gradually getting more adept and adapted to the higher salinity, so they move further out until they're big enough to go, and, you know, and then they leave. And
now, we know that if freshwater fish get in salt water, it burns their gills.
Right.
And that's why freshwater fish cannot live in salt water. The salt will actually just burn their gills. Now, maybe he's onto something, Robert, because maybe if you grow up in brackish water, water with less salt content, if you get into the higher salinity, maybe that does sting on the gills.
Well, it could
maybe it burns a little bit.
It could sting on the gills, but there also might be that grace period of where their body's got to actually kind of acclimate to the absorption of the salt and the minerals because of the buoyancy of it and just overall being mostly in fresh water their whole lot or the beginning part of their lives that they need to. It's kind of like acclimating a fish into your fish tank at the house. You just drop the bag in the water and let it sit there for a while so the surrounding water temperature gets the same so you don't shock the fish. Maybe they need a little bit of both.
So we're going to give RJ this one with why they're more on the northern end of it.
Oh, I win one.
So yeah. RJ wins one.
Mark it on the calendar.
I did. Okay. I just wrote it down.
Yeah, RJ's got a win on this. Now, whatever the reasoning may be, I think the theory is sound. See, you listen to the show, you get these hypotheses, these theories, all this stuff that just, boom, the light bulb goes off. Now, we talk about, they've come out with a lot of new shark laws coming up, and one of the biggest, dumbest things is, I'm going to get back to tarpon in a minute, you're not allowed to use stainless steel hooks. Now, I don't get this. And now, when Robert and I were in the truck talking about this on the way coming up, I was saying, you know, I don't understand why the government doesn't listen to their own scientific research.
Why would they?
You know, it. And then I thought to myself, well, you know, whether it's politics or environmental, I actually choose who I believe. I'm going to say, yeah, I believe this guy's right. I believe this guy's, you know, doesn't know what he's talking about. But I'm just a person reading the different reports and looking at the different reports. I'm not a government panel that's supposed to make high intelligent. No, wait a minute. I said government panel and high intelligent decisions.
Yeah, we were wondering where you were going with that.
Yeah, okay. So basically what I just said is stupid. That doesn't make any sense anyway, because they don't actually listen to the people they hire to do the studies. I've read the studies. There's been three of them done on the different types of hooks. And there is no difference in the mortality rate with stainless steel than bronze, cadmium, and actually cadmium is one of the worst. And bronze isn't much better because it causes a lot of blood poisoning. The fish actually get stuff in their blood from the metals corroding. And it's like if you get an infection, it's easier if you get certain types of metal and you rusty metal or whatever, you can get
tetanus,
you can get infections real bad.
Right.
With the stainless steel, if stainless steel was such a high mortality rate, most of the young people I know now would be dead because they've got stainless steel through their nose, their tongues, their ears, their eyelids, and a few other places south of there that we don't really have to go into. But if stainless steel causes mortality, you know, I got to tell you, I was at my doctor's office getting some meds for, you know, type 2 diabetes. You know, after the 70s that I lived through, I would have thought I would have destroyed myself and some of the other things. And it turns out everything wrong with me is genetic inherited problems. So I got type 2 diabetes. And I'm getting the medicine, and I'm telling the doctor, no, I don't want any of these new meds because they're too expensive, and you don't know what about the side effects. He says, yeah, you'll probably start taking those, and then, you know, you'll probably get something that'll start to rot and fall off. And then we found out on TV they have with the new type 2 diabetes med, genital, what do they call it when, gangrene.
Oh, yeah.
Genital gangrene. I thought the doc was screwing with me. I thought he was just messing with me when he was telling me about that. No, no, no. It's actually real. There's lawsuits with this. And I am an old guy. I'm on the oldest meds they have. You know, I may die, but I'm going to keep all my parts while I die.
I don't blame you.
Back into the tarp, and I said I'd get
back. Go
back
to the stainless steel, though. I think their reasoning, from what I've heard, is that stainless steel, and I could be totally off on this, stainless steel, it takes the longest to dissolve.
But it does not cause infection when it's dissolving. It sits there, and it would give the fish jewelry. It would be like a nose ring or a tongue piercing. Or
yeah, you know, they get the, you know, bull sharks get together, and they say, whoa, man, cool piercing.
Yeah, you know. I mean, you know, it gives the fish a little status, a little class.
Yeah.
You know, get, what do they call that, points in the hood or street creds or
street
something.
Street creds, right.
Street creds. There you go.
But I think that was FWC's reasoning behind that. They're thinking, well, you know, it should really just dissolve and break off.
And they work with the government. They should not be allowed to think. They should hire people who do think and then listen to them.
And the study says it doesn't matter.
No, because of the blood poisoning and all the rest of the stuff with the other types of hooks, the stainless steel didn't matter. So, but I want to get back to the little tarpon. Now, most of these I sight fish for.
Right.
They're mostly found in the canals like East Spring Lake, Edgewater Lake, the Turnaround Canal in PGI, any of the yacht basins back in PGI. But what you're looking for is a lot of times dead-end canals really, and you're looking for a canal that has a wide spot at the end of it. And it's a simple matter of looking over some maps. You can see where they are. You get there, and you see the fish rolling, and you're casting at them. Now, lures that are 2.5 inches down to 1.5 to 2.5 inches are going to be the most effective. Smaller, thinner body stuff. And it's amazing to hook these fish up. They skyrocket up. I started doing this with 8-pound monofilament, 20-pound monofilament leader, and nowadays it would probably be, for the most hookups, go to 8-10-pound monofilament with 20-pound fluorocarbon leader. But if you're going to throw braid, try and throw as light as you can, and make your leader a little bit longer, like 3.5 foot, and that'll give you a little better shot at it. A little shorter leader, they braided line is like fishing with steel leader. So
yeah, the fish can see it very easily in tarpon, have that giant eyeball for good visibility. So
people always say, well, what color difference does the line make? That's why I have a leader. But I literally think different color lines will do better during different water conditions.
Sure, absolutely. If it's matching a similar color in the water, it's going to help make it less visible, but it never will make it completely invisible.
So, anyway, little paddle tails, stuff like that. But I want to get to the other big inshore fish that we have right now. And I've told many people at FWC, tried to lobby for it, but no one is willing to listen because of the eco nuts. I don't want us to ever be able to keep a snook under 40 inches. I want them to move the slot limit up to trophy size, because I think that we should take the older, weaker fish, not the youngest, strongest ones. I just think that's ridiculous. Whoever came up with this slot thing should just have their head banged into the wall until they go, oh, gee, really? Oh, I was being stupid.
No, we should give them that new diabetes medicine.
Yeah, we give them that new diabetes medicine. That'll take care of them. Ooh, God, that's brutal even for me. Gangrene of the genital. Oh, God. I mean, the wife was looking at it. She was freaking out, like, gangrene of the genitals from diabetes meds? Ooh. I hate new drugs. What?
That's strange and weird. And
yeah, and the doctor was just messing with me, telling me, okay, you're going to take this, and your whatever's going to rot and fall off, and then we find out it's true. I'm like, oh, God. All right. The other big inshore game fish we have is snook.
Yeah.
Last night, Chandler, Alex, the new girl at the store, both got 40 inchers.
Yeah, which is pretty darn impressive. I mean, you get over that 40-inch mark on any snook, now you're talking 20 pounds. You know, this time of year, they could have spawned out already, so it might be like in the high teens, but 20 would be a realistic number on a fish like that. You know, and the cool part is that they've started to move out onto the beaches. They're all over on the intercoastal. That's probably the best place to find them. But they're also finding some pretty good quality fish in the passes, whether it's Captiva, Boca, Stump Pass, even the jetties up here in North in Venice. They've been getting some really pretty darn nice snook. The biggest one I've heard of so far is a 43 or 44 incher. That was caught out of Stump Pass the other day.
What's the lure of choice for those? To me, I like an X-Rap 10 or one of those longer ones, maybe like one of the old Husky jerks.
Right, and that's probably what I would be throwing, is something bigger. But I'm probably going to honestly stay with the older tried and true one. I'm going to go with just like a nice bucktail, like a Green Ghost or a red-tailed hawk variety.
I've heard the red tail. I mean, we get guys coming from all over. We have one of the largest selections and colors of those hawks there is.
Yeah. Flare hawk.
Yeah, the flare hawk ones. And yeah. But yeah, they're literally in 84. I'm asking, somebody wants to go snook fishing. What do I sell them? You know, I don't know what to do with, you know, because before I started working at the store, I would put a piece of bait on, live or dead shrimp, whatever, and I'd throw it out there and hope a fish hit. That was the way I went fishing, because I was just relaxing and having fun with it. And then all of a sudden, now people are asking questions. But
there you go. Turn a hobby into a job. Yeah. Smart.
Well, the red tail hawk and the green ghost were the two jigs. And then red and white lures.
Right, which essentially the red-tailed hawk is a white bucktail with a bright red streamer down the center, and the green ghost is the same thing, but it's got
it's got a red mouth, a laughing mouth, mm-hmm. It's got a white head, and then white bucktail with a green feather in it.
Right.
But they just literally go nuts on those. You know, a forgotten snook lure that was always and still is one of the best is the TT-11.
Yeah.
The mirror lure has a 52 model, which is a slow sinking lure, and then they have the TT series, which means tiny trout. It's a 52, which is a slow sinking, sinks about a foot and a half in salt water, and you have to twitch it just like you would the Mirrodines and stuff, but it's an older version, a little bigger version. And if you're looking for that snook, that TT-11 or the TT-18 are two of the most best snook lures ever done, mirror lures.
Right, but they are kind of a finesse bait, so it requires some practice to work them.
Well,
I mean,
you've got to twitch
me personally,
it
I'm not very good at it.
It has no lip on it, and the cool thing about fishing a mirror lure, whether it's the 52, the TT, or the 17, the Mirrodines, is if you don't do it, it don't work.
No, it's just a stick.
Yeah, you throw it out, reel it in, or throw it out, let it sit, nothing's going to happen. But if you twitch it and pause it and flick the tip of your rod and lift it and do all these things with it and figure out the right pattern, you're going to catch a lot of fish with it. But you give that lure its action.
Yeah.
And that's what's ultimately cool about catching them on the mirror lure is the lure don't help you. It's the picture. But you have to, it's like paint by numbers. It gives you the picture, but you have to fill in the blanks. You know, which is ultimately awesome because, like the X-Rapper Pala, it helps you catch the fish.
Oh, no doubt about that.
It's got the lure. It gives you the action. All you got to do is start and stop it a little bit.
Just got to reel.
And it will catch fish, and it will help you do that. Mirror lure went the other way. Yeah, we ain't helping you. You're on your own.
Right.
We ain't doing nothing. Here's the end of it. You got to make it work.
Yeah, no doubt. Now, a place where that works really good is especially around the bridges, you know, like El Jobin, I-75, 41, both 41 in Northport and 41 in Port Charlotte. You know, you get a lot of those fish will hang around those. And the bigger fish are starting to move out of there now, but there's still always a few stragglers around them because the amount of structure and habitats is there,
and
along with the water flow.
There's always a lazy fish.
Oh, absolutely.
Or a stubborn one. Let's face it. Okay, we're all going to go over here and watch the game, and there's always a half a dozen that hang out at the house, or they ain't going anywhere. You know, that ain't not going to happen.
Well,
you know?
Doesn't that mirror lure sink at a foot per second?
A foot to foot and a half a second in salt water. I guess I'm getting old. I don't really remember. But I don't think it's 2 foot a second, but
no,
it
I
might
think,
be. But I think it's about a foot and a half.
I think you're a foot.
When you throw out that 52 or TT mirror lure, and like say up around Northport, I think there's about 8 feet of water right there where 41 crosses.
Right, I think you're right. In the center part of it is, yeah.
So I'm going to cast, see the splash of the water, 1,001, 2, 3, 4, 1,006. All right, now I'm going to start to reel and work that lure.
Right.
I want that mirror lure down within 2 feet of the bottom.
Yes.
Now, because the mirror lure has multiple treble hooks, I'm going to take a pair of pliers, and I'm going to crush the barbs on the front treble hook. If it has three treble hooks, I remove the middle one, crush the barbs on the front one, and leave the back one alone, or replace it with a single hook.
Right.
But
yeah, and you know, VMC has those inline hooks now, because a lot of people are still learning about them, even though they've been out for a couple of years.
Well, what these hooks are is a replacement hook for the treble hooks on an artificial lure. And the eye is twisted 90 degrees different than a hook you would use for bait. The hook you use for bait, the eye is in that position, so when you set the hook, it properly moves the point of the hook. With the lure, that means that the point of the hook would be sticking out the side of the lure. So they bent the eye so that it actually goes, and the point of the hook needs to be pointed up when you put it on a lure. To find the right single hook replacement for a treble hook, put the treble hook down on a table so two points are out, lay the single hook. It should be the same width as two of the points on the treble hook. So when it's laid on the table with the eye on the table, two points down, so it stands up. You don't want to balance it on one of the hooks. You want to actually let both of them come down. So one hook sticking up in the air. Lay your single hook replacement so that it's the same width from the shank to where the point comes up as that treble hook wide. Did that make sense?
It certainly did.
No, it did. And that's to get it to swim properly.
That's the Fish and Frank method. I don't know if there's a better method out there. It's the one I came up with, and it seems to work. It gives you the proper balance, the proper hook size, smaller lures with smaller hooks, bigger lures with bigger hooks, but you can be too big and too small. Right. So this seems to be one of the best. So, okay.
No, that makes a whole lot of sense.
Now, if you're going to go fishing for these big snook, I'm going to say a TT11 or a Rapala X-Rap 10, or as Robert likes, the flare hair or hawk lures, jigs.
Right.
I'm going to go out to the beach, and right now it's warm. So walk out knee deep, turn to left or right, and start casting at shoreline. Now, if you're on this coast of Florida, the west coast of Florida, I walk out knee deep and I turn to the left. I want to be facing south because I want to bring my lure back against the current. I almost never throw to the north because I have to move the lure so fast because the current is coming from the north to the south. That's why I'm 100% positive the Caloosahatchee poisoning caused all the red tide in Venice, because we all know all things flow up current. Nothing ever flows down current. Things always flow up the river, never down the river. Morons.
That, boys and girls, was known as sarcasm.
Yes. So anyway, when you get out there to snook fish on the beach, I walk onto the beach, go out about knee deep, and I'm going to turn to the left so I'm facing south, and I work the lure back towards me. Now, because I cannot contain myself, I'm going to do kind of a fan cast, starting out casting with as shallow as I can get. Most of these big fish are going to be in less than 2 feet of water in the morning and in the evening. Now, because I can't take it, I got to throw out towards deeper water. It's just part of the DNA. You have to. So I'll start off very close to shore. Then I'll cast like out at about a 45. I cast back towards the shore. I cast out at 90 degree. I cast 10 feet off the shore, 5 feet, 3 feet. And I vary the type of retrieve I have. I work some very quickly. I do a lot of starting and stopping on some. Some I just bring in very slowly. I need to find out what the fish are going to react to. It's not this retrieve. It's what retrieve is going to get them going that day.
Or
what
that makes moment.
Or that moment. What makes them hungry? What makes them upset? Any of these things could work.
Absolutely. Now, me personally, what I'm going to do the same thing. I mean, I'm going to always try to fish towards the south. Chances of me going past my knees are pretty slim, but you don't have to, which I like. You have good visibility, but the main thing is when you're walking down that beach, as you're working your way along, you always cast in front of you. Remember where your cast hit, and then you always, as you walk towards it, you want to stop about 10 feet shy of where that last cast was hitting the water, so that way you're overlapping your cast and not spooking fish that might be just outside of that casting distance.
I always never walk more than half a cast forward.
Right. And the other thing you want to do, too, is this time of year is really watch the water very closely. This is where polarized glasses and a hat comes in super handy, is be really focused on some of the little dark spots that you see out there, because snook will sometimes lay completely motionless out there. And a good-sized snook will almost disappear, but they'll sometimes cast a shadow that can be subtle in the water. So don't hesitate to cast to some of those shadows that you're seeing in the water, because they get really very, very silver out along the beaches, almost transparent.
And I would say 7 out of 10 people who have been swimming in the Gulf of Mexico from mid-May till the 4th of July have had snook go between their legs while they're swimming.
Absolutely.
And standing there walking, standing on the beach, having a party, or, you know, having a cocktail, or just, you know, swimming around with the kids. There's snook going up and down that shoreline all day long, all night. I mean, it's what they have to do. They cruise the shoreline. They're looking for food and looking for mating possibilities.
Yep.
And let me add to the, you're in the water knee deep, and you're going south. You got the current behind you, and you're doing the stingray shuffle because you don't want to step on a stingray. That also has a second benefit because you're stirring up where you're walking. And you're stirring up little coquinas and all kinds
sand
of little
fleas,
sand
little
fleas
shrimp,
and things
crabs.
Like that.
And even maybe stepping on some and crushing a little bit of them, letting that scent go forward in front
exactly
of you.
Exactly right. So you're sending a chum stream
down
south of you.
Yep.
And that often gets these fish that aren't doing anything to suddenly they're getting scent. They're picking up scent. They start to get hungry. They get active. And now your lure comes by, and that's the thought behind that. The other thing is you get a lot of little fish active then, too, which the snook eat. So now, so the stingray shuffle has two values to it. One, you know, you don't have to call the paramedics at some point because you can't walk. And two, you're chumming.
We all know my brain does not work like there's normal and then there's me all the way over there. You know what the women in Thailand do to catch minnows and stuff?
I didn't say it. I didn't bring it up.
You were thinking
I immediately changed as I was about to say it, and I added the EMT thing. But,
Yeah, I was just kind of thinking to myself, yeah, well, you're chubbing and, you know, and all this. And, you know, and I don't. They don't have a lot of public restrooms next to the beach.
Right.
But the only thing is, it only works with women. So, guys, hold it.
Right. And the other side is, if you're a polite fisherman and you happen to step on a stingray or you get bit by a jellyfish, carry a little meat tenderizer in your tackle box, a little bottle of meat tenderizer, because that breaks the poison down pretty rapidly, like in a matter of a minute or two, it goes away. And I can tell you from experience, having stepped on a stingray, that really does help.
Yeah. Stingrays, I waited for years barefoot, and you could take your toe and just give them a little poke, and they'll swim off. Mm-hmm. But if you put your foot
in the
middle of their
back, they're going to get you.
It is not his fault he stung you.
Right. He's going to get you right around the ankle, too.
If you were laying on the floor and you had a knife in your hand and a 200-pound person came along and just stepped on the middle of your back and wanted, you know, was just standing there, you know, you're probably going to reach up and poke him with the knife.
That's right.
So, all right. So I have no idea what we're talking about.
Snook on the beach.
Are the spillways running at all?
A few of them are. Some of the Hillsborough canals have got a little bit of water movement because, you know, it's mostly raining on the other side of I-75, but there's enough woods and stuff out there off of Hillsborough that you are getting isolated pockets of rain. So
we even got a few rains at the bait shop,
yeah,
which it almost never rains at that part of the harbor. Oh. You would think with the harbor right there,
right,
we would get a lot of rain.
Right.
We just don't. I don't know why.
What is the weather prognosis now? What are
we
thinking?
We're pretty much going into that summertime pattern of afternoon thunderstorms.
Yeah. Possible showers any day.
Yeah.
Right. You know, it gets hot.
So as we get into July, later into July, we should start seeing those spillways working.
They'll stay consistently running then, but the key thing, like, right now is to try to catch them just as they start flowing, because you've got, like, a 1 to 3 day window where it's dislodged the insects, lizards, and frogs, because the water is raised up enough along the bank that it starts to pull them down, so it becomes a buffet at those spillways. But only lasts for a couple days of where it's on fire, really incredibly good. And then it comes to where it's just a good, consistent study. But that 2 or 3 day window is the difference of 10 to 20 bass in an hour or two of fishing versus 1 to 6 bass in an hour or two of fishing, along with the crappie, the bluegill, the gar, the bowfin, I mean, tarpon and snook, depending on which canal system you happen to be on. They'll all gather at those spill dams for those first couple days. It can just be really pretty amazing.
You know, that speaks good to RJ's theory of the salinity level keeping those fish a little further up in the harbor.
Mm-hmm.
Because when it starts to rain, that slight drop in the salinity sends the tarpon and the snook boiling towards the spillway dams. I mean, they pack up, boom, they're there.
And it amazes me because it's like, the canal can almost be a ghost town, almost void of life, like my canal. You'll have a few fish, but when you get that spill dam going, you go up there and look or start fishing, and it's like, I didn't even know there was this many, you know, 50 or 100 tarpon piled up in this little tiny end of a canal at this spillway. How did they get there? How did they recognize that scent? I mean, it's almost like, you know, they brag about a shark being able to smell a drop of blood in whatever hundreds of gallons of water. I think snook and tarpon can detect that change in salinity or fresh water pouring over those spill dams almost immediately, because they jump up there. Just like when the river goes from 3 foot to 8 foot overnight, those fish all of a sudden move up the river and get into that.
Speaks very well for RJ's theory on that. We're pushing time limits here now. I think we're like 6 or 7 minutes left. Permit going in really thick on the reefs offshore. Red grouper, guys are limiting out in the areas around the Mohawk and the Pegasus and all the reefs out there.
Yeah.
That's, what, 60, 80 feet of water out there. But it's not hard to get your limit of red grouper right now.
Yeah.
And squirrel fish is the bait of choice. You stop in like 30, 40 feet of water, sandy bottom, put half ounce, three quarter ounce bucktails pieces of fish bites on it, because you're not allowed to bottom fish. Now, is it okay to catch squirrel fish with a hook and line, not circle?
Correct.
It is?
Yes.
Okay, so you can put a piece of shrimp on your, or a squid on your thing. I'd still probably use the fish bites.
Yeah, me too.
Bottom bounce that jig along is you just turn the boat, you know, put it in neutral and cast out and just drift along until you start hitting some squirrel fish. Squirrel fish is the bait of choice of those big red grouper. What's going on with the permit, man? Everybody wants to know how to catch them.
The permit, I've had a lot of people asking about them, and basically, you know, the main food source that they really catch them consistently on is small crabs, you know, from...
Which right now we get a gazillion of in the bait shop.
Right. You know, from, you know, nickel size all the way up to basically 3 inches. They'll eat, you know, a big 40-pound permit will take a big...
From
big
quarter to half dollar is about what we're looking for.
Yeah, no, the small ones are the ideal size, without a doubt.
Quarter to half a dollar is a great permit size.
Yeah.
And free lining with a little bit of a split shot, or I like using bobber stops. I do them the same way as I do crappie.
Yeah, I mean, a bobber stop will work very well. There's a couple guys that actually prefer to use like a 1/8 ounce jig head on them, so that way they can get a little bit of a cast on them and let them slowly sink down. But I think most people have their best luck using a split shot or a pinch on weight, you know, right on their leader above their hook and just casting it out.
How far above the hook would you put that weight? Would you do it almost like a jig head within a, you know, right at where you tie on the knot? Or would you put it up by, say, the where you tie your leader and line together?
For me personally, for my confidence factor, I'd honestly probably be putting it up higher by my line-to-line knot.
So you'd use a pinch on, not a split shot.
Correct.
Because the split shot's kind of round and up that high, having 2 points of contact with the pinch on, where you lay the line in, you fold the tabs over it, it's not going to tangle as much as a split shot would.
Right. And I think you get a little bit more of a natural drift, because with those pinch ons, you can roll those ears over and make it basically a perfect little cylinder for a weight, versus the split shot. I always use the removable split shot. So they have those little ears on the back of them to pinch it open, or, you know, to remove it off of there. And I think that
what size hook?
I'd probably be using like a 2-aught, maybe a 3-aught hook at the very, very most.
I'm going to say so. RJ, you a permit guy?
I caught a few, and I was going to add a radical approach to catching permit when you can't get crabs. I've jigged for them using a small bucktail. Probably the bucktail has worked the best for me, but I've caught them on other heavier type lures, and you jig with them off the side of the boat like you were ice fishing, somewhere around mid depth. You know, so if you're in 30 feet of water, around 15 feet, you're bouncing this thing up and down consistently, and I've caught permit doing it that way.
Out in 40 feet of water, I usually find them 20, 25 feet.
Yeah, they're about a mid-range, mid-depth fish. Whenever I've dove and the schools of permit have come by, they're usually about mid-range to the bottom.
And they'll almost always be found almost exclusively on man-made reefs. You'll very rarely find permit over natural reefs for some reason. Not sure what it's about, but it has something to do with the relief or whatever, but they don't like natural structure as much here, not on this west coast of Florida that I'm aware of.
Yeah. I think natural structure here is more rounded and flat, and you get a lot of projections and stuff with the natural reefs, and I think that holds them closer to it. I'm not sure, but like I say, when you dive, you see them right around mid-range, and you only run across
over stuff.
Yeah, they're
and
always overstuffed.
When it comes up, most of the man-made stuff is taller.
Yes.
And when you have a pile of stuff or a ship or parts of stuff like a crane or whatever and pieces sticking up, it gives them something to hover over.
Yeah.
They kind of go around, you know, hovering over the reef. I don't know what that's about because, as far as I know, they do like to bottom feed.
Absolutely.
And so why they would hover over that reef, I just don't understand the behavior. But cobia do it, permit do it, and
AJs do it.
AJs, barracuda.
Even in some areas, red snapper will do it.
Yeah, I don't get that.
Mm-mm. It doesn't make any sense to me at all. You know, one major mistake that people make with permit fishing is when they're over the reef and they're dropping, say, straight down rather than casting towards it, people fight them with too heavy of a drag. And if you fight them with a much lighter drag, a lot of times those permit will swim away from the structure versus if you put a great deal of drag on them, they want to just go straight down to the structure and get broke off or eaten by a Goliath grouper or a Jewfish. So fighting them with that lighter drag generally
you really
makes
want about
chance.
6 pounds of drag on there.
Yeah.
Believe it or not, boys and girls, most tarpon are fought with 8 to 13 pounds of drag. You do have to keep in mind that every few years, the reel companies need to come up with a new reason for you to buy reels. And a few years ago, it was all the ball bearings. It was cross-wrapping the spool. It was, you know, now the big thing is, and it's starting to fade out, thank God, I need 40 pounds of drag on my reel. Well, you pretty much rip the hook out of the fish's mouth, or, you know, you break the tackle, or you lose the rod and reel because you can't hold it. There's
been there, done that.
So, you know,
customer did it the other day with a tarpon.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah, he came in to buy a new setup because he actually cranked down his drag because he thought 40 pounds of drag was appropriate, and he lost his balance with a little boat wake, and it left.
Yeah.
At a quick rate, he said. He said the wake that it produced was
pretty
impressive.
It's like one of those, when you watch a World War II movie and the torpedo leaves the PT boat and down through the water.
Yeah, I had my experience with a blue shark
off
of Cape Cod, probably about a 300-pound animal, and it hit, and I had to drag on really tight. It was a Penn Senator I was using, and it just took off like a rocket ship. There was no way I was going to hold it.
Yep.
That shark, 30 years now, that shark is still pulling that Penn Senator behind it because those things don't rot.
Right.
All right. Well, I think we're out of time. All right. Let's see. Fish and Frank here. And Robert's in the chair across from me. Got RJ in command and control. And each week we try and inform you about something about fishing. If you want more fishing information, go to fishandfranks.com. F-I-S-H-I-N, no G in fishing, boys and girls, fishandfranks.com, F-I-S-H-I-N-F-R-N-K-S.com. Me, Robert, RJ, thanks for listening. Bye. I'm going fishing. Hook, sinker, and line.